interrupting the current neo-Yucatronial, climate-challenged, Beverly-controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism. To bring you behind the woodshed, this is Cricketude Busting Episode PTWRLM 628. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed, because you don't know what you missed until you make the switch and get you behind the woodshed. That dose of reality, because you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. Just asking you to engage, roll up those sleeves, let's get going. We got lots of information. They don't make anything secret on what we have to do, where we have to go. And being free means being free from the demands of a fiat monetary system. And as if to help us, or at least to remind us of the fact, Basel III makes its official, gold is money again. Did you hear about this one, folks? It's been kind of on the way coming. We still have a little bit of doubt about some of this because of what's happening in the States, and not too many people want to jump in the States as well, want to make it real money, but gold is money again. At least the big boys understand this. The monetary, the system, the fiscal system is working through to join all this up together. Basel III makes it official, gold is money again. As of July 1st, 2025, gold will officially be classified as Tier 1 High Quality Liquid Asset, HQLA, under the Basel III banking regulations. That means U.S. banks can count physical gold at 100% of its market value toward their core capital reserves. No longer will it be marked down by 50% as a Tier 3 asset as it was under the old rules. So there's your market fixing. Fix the price. Fix the value. Fix it away from what we would need, and cause themselves to be in control as this goes on. And then they find out they're having to raise this and throw this back in there because fiat isn't really working. They really didn't do what they were supposed to do, and we didn't insist. This is a seismic shift in how regulators perceive gold. And it's a long overdue recognition of what many of us have known for decades. Gold is money. And it's the kind of money you want to own when the world is on fire. This isn't a one-off anomaly. It's part of a long-term trend that began in earnest after the 2008 financial crisis and accelerated after gold's reclassification under Basel III in 2019. According to the WGC, about 30% of central banks say they plan to increase their gold holdings in the next 12 months, the highest level ever recorded in their survey. Let me interject right there. They're still then buying more gold. It's been driven by that, and China buying as well. As you've been watching the price of gold go up, up, up. And watching, if you look at silver, it's been throttled really hard. And so there's a, I don't like to predict all this stuff because it's just, it's fixed. The price is fixed. They do it to benefit them. But the pressure is on silver, being also an industrial metal, to really start to have, to go up even further. Point is, the metal money is coming into vogue, if you will, even to the central banks. I've been reporting on this. The central banks have been buying. I told you about that. China started doing that way back when the price was $1,000. China drove the price to over $1,000 when I reported on that years and years and years ago. And you see where it's gone, and you see probably where it's going to keep going. It's $100 swings now. It probably won't be too unheard of, actually. But we're not in it for money. We're not in it for the speculation. We're in it for its value against other things and other commodities. The curious case of gold miners. But here's where things get interesting and puzzling. While gold prices continue to make new all-time highs, gold mining stocks have been seeing sustained outflows. The Van Eck Vectors Gold Miners ETF, which tracks many of the world's largest publicly traded gold producers, has been bleeding capital for months. Even as a gold prices surge, weekly fund flows have been negative, with investors pulling billions out of mining equities, not the stuff you hold in your hands now. Historically, gold stocks tend to lag the metal itself until higher prices are deemed sustainable. Institutional capital tends to wait for the all clear sign. That often means retail investors can front run the rotation if gold prices stay elevated or go higher as is expected. this author says, I believe we will see renewed flows into mining, the mining space. And boy, don't I know this dynamic. I've got that gold claim for sale still, as you know, and there's no interest yet. Despite these historic highs in gold prices, which only appear to be going higher, I don't see, again, they bounce up and down, but this, the trend is going to be up. And we're watching the fiat collapse and this parity coming in and gold becoming more important as the foundation of any currency now, currency basket coming in. And so as the world corrects itself to a stable valuation for those currencies, I guess you'd want to know why would I want to sell? Well, it's not what I wanted at this point. But someone who represented themselves as my friend and interested in working at gold mine misrepresented himself on both accounts about being my friend, which turns out to be one for his convenience, not of his word, and he lied to me that he wanted to produce gold more than showing off to people that how much of a gold miner he pretended to be. So I found myself in a bad way. This is not a decision I'd want to make, and so this is just a bad thing that happened. The problem for me is I'm physically unable to work the claim or without the heavy equipment he agreed to provide in order to extract that gold. And that, conservatively based on the United States Forest Service mineral exam validation, would be about 4 ounces of gold working long weekends, as we had originally planned. It was a real simple plan. Dig dirt, make gold. I mean, it's not that big problem here. It wasn't even a complicated deposit. And my part wasn't physical in this arrangement, but that I would be the mining engineer designing how we would approach the development and the extraction, and I would do the yearly paperwork to protect the claim as well when necessary. So because I physically cannot, I need to sell that claim to someone that knows the value and can work it, if that answers that question to me from some people for why I would sell it all. Again, I didn't want to. There's really not another angle around this. A lot of my friends have looked at this, and we just can't find a better angle because of my limitations on it. And I also wanted to work toward that land patent. This is probably one of the few things that you can actually see directly. It's right direct to that land patent, how it works. Because being free is not just about gold, but the land from which it's gotten. And that's when you look at the grants and you look at grant law. But yeah, highest prices for gold in history and no interest to date in a gold mine. Just what these gold miners are suffering all this time. And again, this gold just continues to go up. So it's not just mining stocks that lags gold prices, apparently. And that's been a hard experience in being constructively imprisoned right where I'm at here by this guy that went from good friend to criminally abusive. And again, no. I've asked lots of my friends that are still around that do care, and they cannot understand what this guy's done or why or whatever. And they're also not in a position where they can help in the capacity that he was. So it's just been a bad turn of events for me, but as they say, it may be an opportunity for someone else. Because it was a perfect setup, the mining arrangements that we had. It just was really timed out. It all started to go really well. Talk about being in tune and in resonance with life. Things were working so well right up until he threw the stick in the spokes. And no reason. Anyway, back to this indication of where we the people should already be heading to eliminate that fiat slavery system from our lives. Immediately, if not sooner, we can read to be the bank. As I said, in the mining claim, the gold's in the bank, but in this case, be the bank. Basel III is more than a regulatory change. The author says, I believe it's a validation. It affirms what many of us have long believed about gold's status as a monetary asset and a hedge against chaos. If the world's most powerful financial institutions are increasing their gold exposure and regulatory bodies are reclassifying it as a top-tier liquid asset, what's holding the average investor back? I'm asking, what's holding the states back for the people? And I consider this another big disconnect. This article relates only to investing, and it reads a bit like a promotion piece. What I take away from this is the financial system is having to commit to gold. It isn't merely an investment. Remember, the investment and that speculation always sits there that they're doing it. This is not about that. What I believe is important for us is it indicates where the value is for we the people, not only through investment, but in our daily use relative to that precious metal money. whether that be gold or silver coin. Yes, gold is very expensive. You're probably not going to walk into a store and buy a pack of gum. But this is us having to rethink about this. And this is where silver comes in, and where we can start to, again, keep things steady for us. Remove a bunch of the chaos. Just as one reference, think about I mentioned before about my friend bringing my attention relative to that cost of diesel to gold. The diesel fuel being much cheaper today in gold relative to the recent past, while fiat costs were much, much higher. Now, they've been all coming down, but now it's coming down so much we can see that same ratio benefit in gasoline. The prices currently appear to be dropping while gold is substantially risen still, and probably to rise some more, and I don't want to speculate. I'm not doing that. Everybody can watch this go, and we've been talking about it for years and years, as this author apparently has been. And had we been using gold to pay for goods, gasoline would be considerably cheaper, even with the dropping price as it is today, a bit, and maybe not like it was a few years ago, and certainly not like it was maybe 20, 30 years ago, than if we continue to use that fiat. So this is, again, a signpost of what we should be doing. And then we have on top of that, the dollar itself is losing. Lost buying power comes into play now. Again, as this parity system comes online in the world. So the lines are drawn in or upon the bank, whether an earthen bank or a central bank, where gold is now found. So I hope we the people can get ahead of this to keep up and get back to some economic stability and divorce ourselves from that monetary fiscal manipulations that are going on, at least cushion their speculation and corruption and plunder and the piracy, and make those protections permanent through enacting that the government can't do this to us anymore, and based upon the threat to our peace and tranquility, which I'm missing anymore in the Constitution. These officers in government are supposed to keep peace and tranquility, keep the peace. The sheriff does. And they don't do that. This guy Trump's certainly not doing it. But there's a correction going on, so it's going to be destabilizing. If we were in it, we wouldn't have to worry about it. We would be looking at 3,000 of anything. We'd be having gold and silver. And the fact that it's being interfered is also, it extends over to national security. That the government was duty-bound to keep from happening to us. That it has failed. And that's another black eye on the government. This should be so clear to people. We're all focused on so many other things. And that's been, you can evidence that back to the last 160 or so years. I mean, this is what's been going on with this. It was how important, how long ago it's been messed with and caused to be debased, essentially. And the government's supposed to keep that whole, that peace and tranquility and that stability in us, like we the people are obligated to duty-bound to keep that republic that allows that government. And so, being free, you might have to fight off an invasion as well. Again, it's about the land, someone might want to come and take it, as is being evidenced in the world today, as we look out. Again, I tell you, look around the world, you see evidence of what we're supposed to be doing at home. I see people doing all kinds of other stuff. Their interests are in all so many, any other things. And maybe singularly as well. But we've become the masters of being able to see, oh, they're the violators. Let's point our fingers at them. And that's all we end up doing. Let someone else take care of our dirty work. But this on the world stage, we're watching this dynamic being played out about land and the people's principles and honor having to step up in their duties. Even though they're not even part of the same type of people, though this will be a bit of their brothers, if you will. The different lands, different territories, there's still these obligations on we the people as the people in the world. And the defeat by Houthis reveals U.S. military decline. So this is an interesting corollary. The banks are going to gold. The United States economy's going down, even though Trump's doing all this best to save it. It's still a fiat debt system. It's still a debt system. It's not an asset system. Now, the banks are going there. What about you? If you don't go there, they have the fiat on you. You got a debt system. You're a debtor. And I've said this over and over. Master not a debtor be. If you can, another cliche, he who has the gold rules. I guess unless it's stolen. But anyway, defeat by the Houthis. Listen to the decline of our nation, how this is working out. And again, we were told, don't go out and entangle ourselves out and about for no good reason. And the fiat system allowed us to go out and entangle ourselves, contrary to what our organic establishment was attempting to show us. And look at, by those people that look back in history and said, we don't want to repeat those mistakes. Well, we're back into it. The humiliation the U.S. suffered at the hands of the Houthi was the product of the United States military's own arrogance, former Pentagon analyst, retired Lieutenant Colonel Kern Kwiatkowski tells Sputnik. Kwiatkowski compared the U.S. anti-Houthi campaign to the American War for Independence, where the arrogant British military grossly overestimated their opponent, quote, a smaller, tougher, more creative set of people. Now, where did those people go here in America, those smaller, tougher, more creative set? I'm pausing because this is a serious thing. We've been leaving behind and not paying attention, and we start to see the problems of the day, and they were really all avoidable. We let others do our duties. We let others do the dirty work. We let others do the things that we would rather have the government come and steal somebody away and put them in a cage than we do it ourselves. Whether or not we had the right to do that, which mostly you don't have that right anyway. The U.S. military decline, she posits, what has been going on for decades, but was so far easy to hide because the U.S. never fought serious enemies. As such, there are three lessons Russia, Iran, and China can derive from the U.S. misadventures. Do not engage in proxy wars. Be aware that people fighting for their land will fight harder and smarter than, quote, visiting professional armies. If you have to fight people who fight for their lives and their way of life, prepare to be ruthless and to emulate their tactics and strategies. Donald Trump's attempt to sell the U.S. withdrawal from the anti-Houthi campaign as a success does not seem militarily credible, though the material losses of the U.S. suffered in the form of lost aircraft and downed Reaper drones are a good reason to regroup. So are you a people that would fight for their land, fighting harder and smarter? I would say more intelligent. We know what smart is now. They've even adulterated that, but fighting harder and more intelligent than a visiting professional U.S. military? If so, what's the holdup? When do you begin to fight? After you find yourself blockchained to the Siberian Gulag? Because it certainly hasn't been because you just found out most all your representatives are compromised by a foreign agent and the government generally is occupied by a foreign entity that the Houthi just stopped. Are you as intelligent, moral, and principled as those lowly sandal-wearing brown people who will not allow an occupation of their soil or of their soul? When do we see the proof? Or are those things poop? This is a problem for us. I've been talking about this for as long as I've been doing broadcasting, as long as I wrote articles about all this, all my studies, all this international law, all these things, these concepts. And despite all that, and Trump, what they do, my misgivings about Trump, or that he sends opposite signals, which are not part of any actual plan unless for deception, that despite the good news, things could still be a setup for the takedown. And we're watching here in this last week, and things are moving so quickly, I can almost not keep up with the nuances that are going on. And I don't know that I'm going to be able to, but I'll do my best just to keep us apprised on certain things. Again, we the people are separate from this government, and we have to look out for ourselves. And we're being sent signals and signs and wonders, if you will, to be cognizant of and pay attention. And these things appear to me to be the setup for the takedown. Something appears, though, to have changed drastically relative to the Middle East, and maybe the Houthi may have had something to do with that. Very interesting news coming out of a relationship with Netanyahu and Trump. Again, is this a setup for the takedown? I'm really skeptical what I'm hearing. There's too many, again, I should give an example. You can't tell me you're a peacemaker when you go and hand people weapons, like in, let's say, Ukraine, and say you want to make peace and then hand one side weapons. You can't be serious. But this is what Trump does. and he does it in almost everything. I don't think it's a gameplay. I think he's not capable of actually looking at one. He just tries to keep his options open because he doesn't really actually know. He's got a lot of power as a president. Everybody who's a president of the United States has power. But he happens to have this unique ability to put it together with business. If you look, that's what he's really doing. He's making business deals more than geopolitics or political deals, and he wants to get himself out to cost weight balancing of what's going on in the world more than really having a plan to bring peace. He already knows if you do business with people, peace may come along with that. And we're watching some very sketchy things going on relative to the world right now when he went to the Middle East. With disagreements on Iran, Gaza's straining Trump-Netanyahu's relationship, Israel is worried about any deal Trump might strike with Iran. Twice in just the past week alone, Trump made public comments that rankled Netanyahu, the two U.S. officials, the two Middle Eastern diplomats, and two other people with knowledge of the tensions said. Netanyahu was particularly upset when Trump said Wednesday that he had yet to decide whether Iran would be allowed to enrich uranium under a new nuclear deal his administration is negotiating, the two U.S. officials said. The top advisor to Netanyahu, Ron Dermer, conveyed that message to Trump's Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, during a meeting at the White House on Thursday, according to one of the officials. Let me interject as it crosses my mind. There's so much I don't say as I'm just looking through this and reading through them. I need to say this, though. I need to stop myself to say this. That Trump doesn't like or has a problem with Netanyahu does not mean that he's not still helping Israel. And this is another one of those problems. You don't say you want to be a peacemaker, then go help and have your weapons be the instrument of genocide. It's just not what you do. For his part, Trump has been frustrated with Netanyahu's decision to begin a new military offensive in Gaza, which the president sees as an odds with his plan for rebuilding there, according to one of the U.S. officials and one of the people familiar with the tensions between the two leaders. Sounds self-conflicted to me. Gaza by the sea and water theme park doesn't sound like a peacemaker to me more than a peace taker. I mean the land taken, the peace. Privately, Trump has said that the new Israel offensive in Gaza is wasted effort because it will make it harder to rebuild, according to those two sources. The U.S. is currently pushing Israel and Hamas to agree to a ceasefire in Gaza, which Dermer was set to discuss with Witkoff during the White House visit this week, according to the Middle Eastern diplomats and senior Trump administration officials. But Trump's approach to Iran has been the biggest point of contention with Netanyahu. The Israeli leader has been frustrated for weeks with Trump's refusal to stop military strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities and his decision to instead try to reach a deal aimed at blocking Tehran from acquiring a nuclear weapon, according to the two U.S. officials and the two Middle Eastern diplomats and two other people with knowledge of the tensions. Quote, they're worried about any deal, one of the U.S. officials said of the Israelis. And that's been a theme as well. They don't really want to make a deal at all. They want to clean Palestine of Palestinians. Israel has made clear to the U.S. that it does not want Trump to cut nuclear deal that leaves Iran with any uranium enrichment capabilities, the U.S. officials and Middle Eastern diplomats said. Trump has expressed an openness to Iran maintaining a civilian nuclear program. Well, we haven't made that decision yet, Trump said Wednesday when asked if the United States' position is that Iran can be a uranium enrichment program for civilian nuclear purposes. Netanyahu was blindsided and infuriated this past week by Trump's announcement that the U.S. was halting its military campaign against the Iranian-backed Houthi in Yemen after the Houthis agreed to stop firing on U.S. ships in the Red Sea. The Houthi have just attacked Israel with a missile that hit close to Ben-Gurion Israel main airport. That is an older story. This is an older report. They've hit it a number of times since then, and since the agreement that Trump made with them to not hit U.S. ships. And this is not a capitulation by the Houthi, I can tell you. I've seen the mainstream media say otherwise, and lots of other people. This is not a capitulation, Brotherhood, at all. Again, the defeat of this military is a real embarrassment. What we entangled ourselves with is quite the disgrace, actually. And for what reason? See, we're supporting genocide when we do that. It's supposed to be against the law in the United States. Anybody in the official, in the offices of the government know about law anymore? People laugh, you know, you might listen to me, we might be like, well, you laugh. I don't think this is funny to expect that they ought to. This is one of our failures. We need to continue to expect that they ought to be doing what they're supposed to be doing. And when they're not, we're supposed to call them out and check, be the check and balance for that violation. The strain in the relationship between Trump and Netanyahu comes as the president is set to travel the Middle East next week, which he's done. And he's made his arrangements, and he did his business deals, and he's got his money coming from the Saudi Arabia. And I just got to point out real quick, I noticed the UAE is going to get Tartar Air Base, or the bay, the deep water port in Syria now because of all this. Qatar and Saudi Arabia just paid off the debt to the World Bank that Syria owned. The deep water port has now been taken from Russia and given to UAE, and that to the biggest shipping company in the world. And then I want you to go read the words inside the stories to see this is tying in what I was talking about before, the foreign trade zones. You'll see all the words in there. That's what they're doing here. They're advancing into Syria to put these globalist foreign trade zones into place already before even the people of Syria will be burdened with the payment of all of that. This is the forward advancement that's being done, and the understand that Saudi Arabia and the UAE and all these, the Qatar, all these are really Israel allies. That's why I say this appears, this little kerfuffle here is really not changing the underlying plan. That what's intended, killing people is intended, it appears to me. And this is just the steps in order to get it to go. And it's going to appear like peace is being done. But as I reported a long while back when the axis of resistance that we saw then, the other countries that weren't stepping in like Egypt and Jordan and Saudi Arabia and all that to help protect, said everybody's in a meeting, they've got their own interests. Iran, all of them, have their own interests in what the Palestinians just happen to be the dessert. They're just the focus in order to get everybody to be working on what their side hustle will be. And so for me, that's just a big deception. And I'm not necessarily going to believe in what I see much here. And so it may sound like I'm completely negative. All I'm doing is I'm pointing out what Trump is doing, which is negative, ultimately. It's not working to be the white hat peacemaker. You act completely different if you're going to do that. Witkoff also planned to attend another round of negotiations with Iran this weekend in Oman. So you're hearing these players. This is out of the blue. It all of a sudden happened. It's all together. Trump's being treated like the king of the world type thing with lots of pageantry. And so watch this show, essentially, but understand what's going on underneath. As I keep telling you, for us in the United States, be careful. You think all this thing's going on, but look what Trump's implementing right in front of your face. It's exactly what they want for the future that they want. And we're seeing the money players playing now, the billionaire and trillionaire boys clubs are all working together right here. Whether that's nations or families, royalty or funds or whatever, they're all working. And so we also were hearing here this week, though, in giving credit to Trump, again, he's bringing certain things to bear, but I'm very concerned they are cover for lots of other things I'm noticing. And because, I didn't finish my thought there, the UAE has just committed to get that lease for that Tartar deep water port. They're going to invest $800 billion. And Trump was over himself for the Saudis to invest in America $600 million in multiple areas. And we'll get to that, what those areas are. And listen very carefully what that list is. But tell me when you think it's not, something's not what I've been talking about being the modernization problem that we're looking at, that's bringing in the future that they want, the globalization, the globalism that's going on, is still going on. Again, like Trump is onshoring a lot of this. Well, you just heard this deal that Trump's talking about. He's going to now get $600 billion more dollars to onshore more of that infrastructure. But notwithstanding that, we got better, more consistent olive branches are beginning to be offered, better than recently. And to Trump's credit, I got to give him credit on how he's moving this thing through at that level. If that's where it's going to end up, then great. But I don't know. He's now more on the proper path. Do we dare to hope? We hear top Iranian officials say Tehran would forego highly enriched. Now, remember, we got highly enriched for nuclear weapons, and we have the enrichment for the civilian nuclear. And I don't see why they shouldn't be entitled to their own civilian nuclear like everybody else has that has any nuclear power at all. At any rate, we'll see how this works out. Again, Trump is wishy-washy. If he was a peacemaker, he would not argue with the fact they are entitled, not entitled, it's their right to determine what type of power systems that they want for their civilian population, their peaceful use. And in Iran, if you go read about them, they do a lot of nuclear type medicine components, which are very interesting, very, very intelligent people that are working there to bring the materials that medicine, that modern medicine needs in the diagnostic side too, which is more important to my mind. Being able to understand what you're dealing with, not just to fry you. It's not just where they're making these beams of, you know, radiation to kill cancer. They're making all kinds of different testing systems. Here are these comments from the member of the Supreme Leader's inner circle appear to be the clearest public statements yet on Iran's willingness to reach an agreement with the United States. Iran is ready to sign a nuclear deal with certain conditions with President Donald Trump in exchange for lifting economic sanctions. Al-Shamkhani, a top political, military, and nuclear advisor to the Iranian Supreme Leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, said Iran would commit to never making nuclear weapons, getting rid of its stockpiles of highly enriched uranium, which can be weaponized, and agree to enrich uranium only to lower levels needed for civilian use, and allow international inspectors to supervise the process in exchange for the immediate lifting of all economic sanctions on Iran. Let me interject. This is almost the same agreement that Trump backed out of. So Trump walked himself away from a problem that was solved, and now he's just going to enter back in. He's going to take credit for this one, but it's just almost re-engaging what was there before. And so that's essentially what we're seeing. Iran's just asking for what they had before. And the only reason why they went to enrichment for nuclear weapons is because of the threats that were coming against them from Israel, backed up by the United States and Trump. So you can see this thing's upside down and backwards relative to what they've stated. And let me offer it too, if you haven't heard. There's I think it's called a fatwa. There's a rule, an overriding rule that it's a religious state. They say the religion, the theology will not allow nuclear weapons. They're already not going to have it. So in a way, this is not even a concession. But United States and its advisors are so stupid that they think that this is going to be violated without any evidence, like Putin done it too. Everybody, Iran done it, Putin done it, China done it. No proof. It's like they're doing it home. No proof that anybody did anything wrong, but you're going to be an extremist homegrown. They weren't going to go to nuclear anyway. How do you like that? And then they were forced to, and they still didn't lift it. All they did is they gave themselves a closer capacity that if they needed to protect themselves, survive, that they could work toward getting that bomb, and I suggest they probably already have ties in with a couple of other nuclear powers to get those bombs quick, if they need them, for survival. And these agreements that are being coming down, let's say between Iran and Russia, may be indicative of that. Though I don't know. I'm not reporting that. I'm saying that's what it looks like. It's already being set up. Asked if Iran would agree to sign an agreement today if those conditions were met, Shamkhani said yes. His comments appear to be the clearest public statement yet on Iran's expectations and willingness to reach a deal from the Supreme Leader's inner circle. Iran's Supreme Leader has the final say on all matters of national security. Quote, it's still possible. If the Americans act as they say, for sure we can have better relations. It can lead to better situation in the near future. Doesn't sound like a bunch of resistant extremists to me, folks. I don't know about you. Shamkhani sat down with the news, NBC News, just hours after Trump offered Iran an olive branch that was combined with threats of crippling economic sanctions should Iran not accept an agreement to limit its nuclear program. Trump's remarks were criticized by the Iranian president, Masoud Pezeshkian. Quote, he thinks he can come here, chant slogans, and scare us. For us, martyrdom is far sweeter than dying in bed, he said Wednesday in comments broadcast live on state television, according to Reuters. You came to frighten us? We will not bow to any bully. Shams Kanani also expressed frustrations at Trump's tone and continued threats. Quote, he talks about the olive branch, which we have not seen. It's all barbed wire, he said. The U.S. and Iran have been holding talks over Tehran's nuclear program for weeks, with Trump's Middle East envoy, Steve Witkoff, calling the last round in Muscat, the capital of Oman, encouraging. Iranian Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi, meanwhile, called the negotiations difficult but useful. In a Wednesday interview, Shams Kanani expressed concern that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, often known by his nickname Bibi, or as I call him, Netanyahu, could try to derail the process through back-channel lobbying in Washington. Now, interject, we just heard that there's a problem with him maybe doing that. And we've seen a lot of action counter to what Netanyahu would want, what Netanyahu would want, not necessarily what Israel needs. Quote, if the Americans remove Bibi, the Bibi effect, they can easily, Vince, easily sign the deal, Shams Kanani said. There are signs, however, that Trump may be distancing himself from Netanyahu, and as I just reported on, and this is the setting up the tension, which I think may be running cover for what's really going on, which is a continuance of what let's say, the Greater Israel Project and the Gaza casino water theme park by the sea. It wants to be, as we heard, Trump wants to rebuild. He wants to rebuild. He's already talked about that, talked about bringing military in to do that as well. While Netanyahu has supported military action against Iran nuclear facilities, Trump has begun to see an opportunity to remove the threat of Iran acquiring a nuclear weapon by making a deal with the government. And this is, again, a waste of time. He may take credit for this, but this was already done years and years ago when Trump removed that agreement, which all it would have taken, if there was a real problem, would be an amendment. But this is the way Trump works. So he creates the problem he's going to solve, and he becomes the hero. And again, that's just the standard Hegelian-style dynamic, isn't it? And part of the remaining problem with the ostensible rift with Netanyahu, and my continuing concern, as you've heard me discuss numerous times, is Trump's Abraham Accord is still in play to bring the Saudis closer to Israel, also explained this week in this article, recognizing Palestine could be one of Trump's most pro-Israel moves yet. So listen to the big flip going on here. But understand there's a play underneath. Remember, Trump brought in his son-in-law, Kushner. They made that Abraham Accord. And that's still in play, still working. And then understand all the players that happened this last week where Trump went to the Middle East. It could help stabilize the Middle East and ultimately serve in the interest of the Jewish state. Media reports are increasingly suggesting that President Donald Trump may announce U.S. recognition of Palestinian state during his upcoming visit in the Middle East. The White House is preparing to unveil a plan that would support the establishment of a Palestinian state, explicitly excluding Hamas. The media line reports that, citing a Gulf diplomat source, such a move, the source claims, could dramatically shift the regional balance of power and pave the way for new normalization agreements between Israel and the Arab states. Analysts believe that if Trump does recognize a Palestinian state, it will not only mark a diplomatic milestone, but also serve as a catalyst for expanding the Abraham Accords, the U.S. brokered normalization deals between Israel and several Arab nations, which were introduced in 2020. So far, though, this is also that two-state solution, which is improper relative to the original intention for Palestine prior to 1947, when the King of England mandated Palestine into separate Jewish and Arab states, admitting, despite the denials today, that Palestine was an existing place and government, and also admitting that the intention to be land thieves by this illegal belligerent occupier called the Zionist Federation Political Movement, posing as a religious state, the payoff for committing genocide instead of being stopped in its tracks by Trump having the power to end this atrocity is not what we're hearing. It's a continuation of it. And with the King of England's support, as we heard here weeks ago, and the rest of this article, if you read through it, explains the United States-Israel relationship, even if unreasonably so to my mind, but how deep it is, where it is. It's the only reasoning within the article would return the U.S. back to the United States and the corruptive influence of the Zionist political movement, illegal belligerent occupier, overthrowing the two-party system in America in favor of its own uniparty. So this is the only thing reasoning I can see this would be continuing at all, because we're already compromised in the United States. But folks, trust the plan, would you? Plus, just trust the plan. Look at the surface of it, how shiny and beautiful it is. Terrific, folks. Trump is just being promoted as a peacemaker for things he could have ended yesterday, because he's in control of the country that started the problems in the first instance, or where this country didn't stop things that should have been stopped immediately, if not sooner. We aren't a peacemaker to start a fight, then stop the fight we started. And it's not altruistic. In this light, a possible U.S. recognition of Palestine is far more than symbolic. It is a profoundly political act with the power to reshape regional dynamics, recalibrate U.S. alliances, and reignite long-stalled hopes for a trusting and lasting peace, but not without significant cost and risk on both sides. That's not peace either, is it? Moreover, any serious shift toward a two-state solution... How did I predict that, folks? Here it is, right in the article. A two-state solution, you would say, well, I read the article. No, as I'm reading the article, and then here it pops up in the article. Again, I guess I never, I talk about my method of how I go through this. I read the title, I get a thought, it runs me down, I read a couple more lines, I start seeing things, and I'm not looking at what they're writing to be educated by the writing. I'm looking at the principles underlying what I'm watching to see another, typically you see a different thing. And sometimes it's a straight up truth, and you see the truth, you can take it for what it is. But there's an application of experience and knowledge and things that go to looking at this. So here we have it. It's stated right in the article. Moreover, any serious shift toward a two-state solution would require a transformation of Israeli domestic politics, potentially leading to internal polarization and upheaval. And here we have the shift toward a two-state. As I said, this wasn't an original idea. This would be a shift from the original idea. And they all know this. Trump recognizing a separate Palestinian state without Hamas will also get rid of the evidence of Satan Yehi's criminal meddling, wouldn't it? Aiding a war criminal, though, is not my idea of a peacemaker either. So what's at play? Trump heaps praise on Saudi Crown Prince MBS as he touts economic development. And I don't bring up this too much. This term economic development is not unknown. I bring it up in the past a lot more. We had direct connections with this in JMD, Jefferson Mining District, with economic development. Found out economic development has nothing to do with your production in your country. It has to do with this tertiary level of the inputs that are put into where the government wants to steer your economics, wants to steer your businesses. It's not the type of economic development that you might think. It's more along the lines of the foreign trade zones, and you get benefits by following doing what you're told, essentially. So economic development grants will not be given to a farmer, a rancher, a miner, or anybody else that's a producer. And it's kind of a shocking thing to see. You would think that that's part of the economy. See, I've told you it's not. I've explained there's these three levels, at minimum three levels of the society. The producers at the bottom, and they get really no benefit whatsoever. They get a lot of regulation. And yet that's not supposed to actually happen. This is how bad it's been. But anyway, back to here. Trump heaps praise on Saudi Crown Prince as he touts economic development. So right away I can know this is going to go into the future that they want. I guess I should just say it that straightforward. This is where the government wants things to go. The speech marks a remarkable turn of the United States' position in the country. President Donald Trump spent the bulk of what was Build as a major foreign policy address to outline his vision for the Middle East, instead touting his domestic policies and heaping praise on Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman while speaking at the U.S.-Saudi Investment Forum on Tuesday. 4 years after the U.S. intelligence community report was released that concluded that the Crown Prince approved the assassination of Washington Post journalist Jamal Khashoggi, Trump lauded the Crown Prince for his leadership and friendship. This is the kind of friend you want, folks? Really? Really? I mean, really? He's your greatest representative. And it didn't, and if I didn't like him, I'd get out of here so fast, you know, that, don't you? He knows me well. I do. I like him a lot. I like him too much. That's why we give so much, you know, too much. I like you too much, Trump said while speaking in Saudi Arabia. The speech marks a remarkable turn from the United States, especially considering the international condemnation then President Joe Biden received when he visited Saudi Arabia in 2022 and famously fist bumped the Crown Prince while Biden's once labeled Saudi Arabia a pariah. Trump celebrated the kingdom, its leader, and its potential. Quote, for the people of this room, the days of economic misery under the last administration are rapidly giving way to the greatest economy in the history of the world, Trump said, speaking to the members. Who is he making great again here, folks? Speaking to members of the royal family and some of the most powerful business leaders in the world, Trump credited the Crown Prince for Saudi Arabia's recent economic development. I can't stress enough, I see those two words together, you can might as well just go sustainable development to the future that they want, and we're looking at everything that Trump is bringing in the United States when you know about Elon Musk, Palantir, Oracle, Stargate, on and on and on, all the things I've been reporting on here. I can't get away from it. It's just so encompassing and comprehensive, the attack against us. I don't think people see it. I really don't. I don't see hardly anybody talking about it. And not concerned about it, for sure. Riyadh is becoming not just a seat of government, but a major business, cultural, and high-tech capital of the entire world, Trump said. Mohammed, do you sleep at night? How do you sleep? Trump said, as the crowd applauded. Critics doubted that it was possible. What you've done, but over the past 8 years, Saudi Arabia has proved the critics totally wrong. Throughout his remarks, the Crown Prince smiled on applauding and laughing at Trump's jokes with billionaire Elon Musk seated prominently over his shoulder. The president also announced he will be ordering the end of sanctions against Syria and suggested he did so at Saudi Arabia's request, as well as Turkey's. You understand the overthrow that the United States and Israel just did in Syria, and now you see the benefits coming. And who the players are. Keep them all in track of what's going on. And there's this underlying current that's happening. There's actually a couple of them. I can't keep touching them. They kind of intermingle here and there as they go. But watch these. It's the only reason why I talk about some of this stuff. We're being overthrown on a global scale. And we're watching the shift. You don't think BRICS is involved here? You don't think this is the shifting of the parity management and all that's irrelevant relative to the future that they want and the control of it all up high above? Oh, what I do for the Crown Prince, Trump quipped. The sanctions were brutal and crippling and served as an important function nevertheless at the time, but now it's their time to shine. Trump then touted his immigration policies, his win in November, and his own economic agenda. Quote, the United States is the hottest country with the exception of your country, he told Prince Mohammed. Quote, I have to say, right, I won't. I'm not going to take that on. No, Mohammed, I'm not going to take that on. Wouldn't that be a terrible thing if I made that full statement? But I will get to it. You're hotter, at least as long as I'm here, you're hotter. Real chummy with the Khashoggi killer, don't you think? What he won't do for the Crown Prince, including dropping sanctions with the leader of ISIS, the terrorist over there in Syria now. Formerly Al-CIA Duh, a man that was said to be a wanted terrorist by the United States. I think $10 million bounty on his head. Now ruling Syria, killing Christians and Alawites. That special sect. All welcomed by Trump here. Yeah, maybe there's more to all this that this kumbaya than meets the eye. Maybe we should really watch this. That whatever the underlying gamesmanship, Trump can also be credited because it's going to be going toward what the people see in the United States or the economy and offsetting certain things. Although we're not, look very carefully, we're not seeing anything like what's being promised. The Congress is not moving in the direction that Trump needed at this point. I've seen a bunch of recent statements. They're giving crumbs, essentially. And you were going to see the larger appropriations being made, no cutting whatsoever. But we can get this much coming into the country now, because this is part of that tariffs, getting more stuff to come into the country from the foreign sources. Saudi Arabia's $600 billion commitment to invest in the United States, building economic ties that will endure for generations, future generations, see, to come. The first deals under the announcement strengthened our energy security, defense industry, technology leadership, and access to global infrastructure and critical minerals. You keeping track of this, folks? What have I been talking about all this time? Economic development, the future that they want. Saudi Arabia's coming in to invest $600 billion, $200 billion less than the UAE in the Tartar deep water port, to show you the importance of that. What are they going to invest in? In transportation nodes. It's a hub, an internodal hub of transportation. Just what the foreign trade zones are about when you understand this. But we're going to get immediately $600 billion invested by Saudi Arabia in what? The defense industry and technology leadership and global infrastructure. I can't put a finer point on it than right there. And when you listen to that list of the investments, then look at what's going on in country. Outsiders are beginning even to take notice. As this now report comes and essentially just restates more of what I've said. People from afar looking in. Digital prison in the making. WikiLeaks blasts Palantir for spying a Gaza and Gaza massacre. And so remember, Palantir is involved with Israel. They're using AI to go kill more Palestinians. And if you listen to the read between the lines of what the statements are being said in this country, United States, well, really everywhere, if you look at the governments everywhere, but in particular where we think we got the home of the free and brave and all that stuff, particularly troubling what's being set up right now. But someone's looking at us in the United States, a digital prison in the making? What was it, the Siberian Gulag? Have you heard that before? The digital panopticon? A Russian lady here, author, looking. The CIA-linked military tech firm thrives under Donald Trump despite dark controversies. WikiLeaks has outlined a string of warnings about Palantir's ties to spying, possible war crimes, and human rights abuses. The Gaza killware is the first on the list. Palantir provided AI-powered targeting tools to Israeli forces they used in a deadly strike on the civilians and aid workers in Gaza. Left off the WikiLeaks list is Palantir's Ukraine AI war lab. Time reported that Palantir turned Ukraine into an AI war lab in June of 2022, offering its services for free. In February 2023, CEO Alex Karp bragged that the Palantir was responsible for most of the targeting by Ukrainian forces, whose military has a record of striking residential areas and civilian infrastructure. Predictive policing, and EU privacy violations. Global infrastructure was what they're investing in from Saudi Arabia, remember? In 2020, Dutch privacy group SOMI demanded a probe into Palantir's secretive work with EU police and spy agencies, including Europol and German state police. SOMI accused Palantir of abusing civilian data and pushing predictive policing that undermines the presumption of innocence. You heard any of this stuff before, folks? Anybody? If you've never heard Behind Witch, then maybe not. But if you have been listening, have I missed anything yet? The Verge revealed that between 2012 and 2018, Palantir ran covert predictive policing programs in New Orleans without public consent. ICE, deportations and family separation. Palantir's software has been used by the U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement, ICE, for workplace raids, deportations, and family separations, according to Vice and The Intercept. The Intercept also reported in 2017 that Palantir tools allowed ICE to track U.S. citizens using biometric data and access classified intelligence, even from the CIA. And let me remind us that Intercept is not so clean and pure, and they were the ones that received all that Snowden stuff and never really produced much of it. And the owner of The Intercept at the time, and I don't know the relationship of it anymore, I stopped following it, is also one of these people that are the billionaires in control. I reported all that years and years and years ago. Branding WikiLeaks a threat. Now, this is where we get into why they use WikiLeaks. It's WikiLeaks-centric, if you will, and what they see for them. I looked at it for us and said, well, there's no difference. It's just the specifics is all. WikiLeaks shared what appears to be a 2011 Palantir white paper that explicitly labeled the organization a threat. Soon to be homegrown, remember, folks? The document suggests Palantir was keeping surveillance on WikiLeaks servers, its founder Julian Assange, and staff members. It's also indicated that Palantir's intent to capitalize on WikiLeaks vulnerabilities and combat the group, or any one of the homegrown. Now let us visit the salad bar for another helping of Palantir, DOGE Doge's magic wand, or deep state's weapon. How about both? Palantir's meteoric market rise has sparked speculation about the role Elon Musk's Department of Government Efficiency and the dark military projects. Let's explore more. Does Musk's Doge use Palantir tech? Ex-users claim Palantir's AI facilitated Doge's access to USAID and other government projects. Wired reported that associates of Palantir and its co-founder Peter Thiel were involved in a 2024 online recruiting push for Doge. The Financial Times says that Trump picked Palantir executives for key government roles after his 2024 victory. Palantir co-founder Peter Thiel is a Trump ally since 2016, also backed VP J.D. Vance's political rise. Also, Vance was an employee of one of the companies in California. Palantir's dark side. Named after the powerful crystal balls in The Lord of the Rings, Palantir was founded in 2003 to assist U.S. intelligence and received early CIA funding through its venture capital firm InQtel. It's provided solutions for U.S. NATO operations in Afghanistan, Iraq. Boy, look how that turned out. Maybe this isn't a threat, is it? Anyway, we're going to go with the threat side. Maybe that's all a plan too, right? Look at what happened to Syria. It has recently come under scrutiny for aiding the Zelensky regime and the Israeli war effort. So on that last note, if we in the West are as intelligent as the Afghans, maybe things won't be so bad. The U.S. ran home with its tail between its legs, it seems to me. That's the question. Are we that intelligent? Are we that principled? Are we that organized? Are we that morally upstanding? I'm not so sure. I'm not holding my breath in this open-air prison known as America. Soon to be, and if not in large part already, the Siberian gulag tracked and traced by Israeli Palantir administered efficiently by the muskrat. So keep trusting in the Q tell you the plan, not the plan, not your required objection to tyranny, which is supposed to be your duty if you're an American at all. And you can hear how these globalists in the Gates plan to move the plan. And just as you've been told, behind the woodshed, globalist WEF has a chilling plan to control your mind and body. The WEF top speaker of neurotechnology, Nita Farahani, suggests implanting false memories and using pain as a tool for coercive measures. Companies could profit from embedding brain sensors in devices like headphones to track brain activity, she says. They don't even try to hide it anymore, says the author of this post. Get the link, see the video. But before you focus on the physical implantations here, consider all the cognitive warfare that's already implanted in you since before you were probably born. Been going on a long time. And the legal system doesn't seem too encouraging for enjoying fundamental rights, but does sound like the Bar Association and its attorneys are all in to inflict your civil rights. The system's already set up to receive this. Just as you'll hear old Nita Farahani giddy over using pain, which you can read yourself, your civil rights, at 42 U.S.C. 1981, your civil rights equal under law that you all shall be subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions of every kind to no other. Exactions meaning wrongful extortion. She's giddy to make sure that you get these, and that they can put this on you. And this is the future that they intend for you in the Siberian Gulag with that token citizenship. And hot on the heels of that observation, essentially finally coming to what I've been saying, now seeable from afar, though interestingly the author, being from Russia, not seeing it in her own nation's digital demise. The OCC banks can buy and sell their customers' crypto assets held in custody. Watch the themes that I've been going through all this time. We're watching this transformation slowly over this time. As you heard me break in, gold is being bought as an asset now. On July 1st of 2025, Basel III kicks in. The banks now also can buy and sell their customers' crypto assets held in custody. Remember, just a few years ago, the banks and these conditions, these governments were saying, we don't know anything about these crypto conditions, these issues. A new policy directive from the United States Regulator of National Banks says institutions can also outsource crypto custody and execution to outside parties. What to know? The Office of the Comptroller of the Currency is further letting bankers off the crypto leash, clarifying through letters Wednesday that banks can buy and sell their customers' crypto assets. The banks can also use third-party services on crypto work, the OCC said. This follows earlier OCC guidance, matched by the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation and the Federal Reserve, that reversed the previous policy restricting bankers to getting spinoffs from the regulator before they could move on crypto matters. The U.S. Office of the Comptroller of Currency, which regulates national banks, has continued its about-face to earlier resistance to cryptocurrency in banking, issuing interpretive letters that say that the institutions can, at their customers' behest, buy and sell crypto assets in custody. The newly explained policy stance released by the OCC on Wednesday also is clarified that the bankers can outsource crypto activities to third parties, including custody and executive services, as long as it all still checks the boxes of the watchdog safety and soundness requirements. Safe and effective, folks. Safety and soundness. Safe and effective. The OCC is giving the banks more crypto freedom. This week's move follows the agency's March reversal of a longstanding policy that demanded bankers check with their government supervisors before moving ahead with new crypto business. Your banking industry was on such a tight leash, right? Your government was right there in your hip pocket. These letters signal a shift in the OCC's approach, Catherine Kilpatrick Bowes, Starkware General Counsel, and former Chief Legal Counsel of Atsibo Digital, noted on the social media site X. She said the agency now seems to be melding crypto into traditional banking, and the additional guidance that third parties are okay is a boon to regulated crypto native service providers. We just interject one other thought. When I keep seeing this third party, remember I told you the problem of third party interference in the Siberian Gulag, in the sustainability globalization part of it. as incremental fascist public-private partnerships further developing that Siberian gulag. The safety and soundness requirement means the government knows you and nothing is private as well. This comes out of that Patriot Act. Know your customer. Doesn't go away. It also doesn't keep you free from the IRS scrutiny or control. Those tax slaves, the extortion victims, the taxpayers are to suffer their civil rights equally, together with any attendant pains and punishments or any of that that you read, you'll read when you see for yourself what it says in Title 42 U.S.C. 1981. So ultimately, how is Bitcoin or any blockchain token citizenship decentralized or private and free from government equal right to wrongful extortion called exactions of every kind in 42 U.S.C. 1981? Yeah, government extortion really makes America great again, don't it, President Trump? And you just said you'll graciously accept raising that wrongful extortion on people to justify the spending increase planned by your GOP buddies, didn't you? Why don't you, instead of your big and beautiful bill, insist on fiscal responsibility, eliminate extortion upon we the people, return to sound money, and delineate then what the government benefit provided by government is that taxes are sought to remedy the deleterious effects and consequences in that license for the societal exploitation, like a financial instrument system that legal entities can choose to engage and be subject to, separate from we the people. But the risks of their speculation falling squarely on their shoulders, leaving we the people alone. Or is it tariffs, the shifting of tax and extortion to their consumption by Americans, so-called, the pay irrespective of status? It is a failed idea, too, despite the Founding Fathers' simple plan that didn't affect those Americans in the past before the imposition of any unsound money, the fiat system which created all these harms that the taxes are collected were to cover. But don't. It's not too beautiful. This is the BTWRLM 628. And a stab, if you will, hopefully a bit here at this Siberian gulag, with its encroachment on privacy, in particular the know your customer nonsense, treating you as you're a criminal. You're presumed a criminal. That's why they want to know about you. And the Siberian transformation, it all began with that PATRT Act, the Patriot Act. And finally, a representative thought it invasive enough to move to repeal it. Luna introduces bill to repeal Patriot Act, restore privacy. U.S. Representative Anna Paulina Luna has introduced a bill, the American Privacy Restoration Act, that aims to repeal the Patriot Act, PATRT Act, passed in 2001. The Florida Republican believes that what has, in the meantime, become a notorious post-9/11 legislation has been abused by rogue intelligence officers to carry out mass surveillance in unlawful ways. Announcing the bill, Luna mentioned that the Patriot Act has, over the last decades, been used to interfere in elections, violate innocent Americans' privacy by spying on them, and even settle personal scores. According to a representative, the ability to misuse and abuse the Patriot Act in such a way that turned it into a tool for what is known as the deep state, whereas her legislative proposal seeks to take away the ability of these permanent power centers to violate the Fourth Amendment that should protect against unreasonable searches and seizures. Critics have been saying that since 2001, the Patriot Act has been turned against Americans themselves and used it as an excuse to subject even those not suspected of any wrongdoing to mass surveillance, all the while sidestepping the necessary guardrails and oversight. Let me interject again. When you are deemed and presumed a misdemeanor in that act, the extremist that they haven't caught yet, you didn't deserve anything. Like you're seeing Trump deport people who he thinks don't deserve a thing, not even due process. Luna believed this was as a product of the most sophisticated unaccountable surveillance apparatus in the Western world, that she believes it is necessary to act now to rectify the situation. It's past time to rein in our intelligence agencies and restore the right of privacy. Anyone trying to convince you otherwise is using security as an excuse to erode your freedom, the legislator is quoted as saying. And I responded to an ex-Twitter that Representative Luna posted announcing her bill, and I said, I hope, Representative Luna, that you make sure that the smallest piece of concentrated evil is disposed of, and that any and all follow-on pieces hiding underneath a piano somewhere, so it doesn't resurrect itself ever. So maybe contact her and see what you can do to help. One thing will be for everyone to contact their representatives all throughout the country and explain what you need and have them support the repeal and vote on the repeal. And bring your fact-based reasons why, because, you know, facts are good. And there are so many more reasons to repeal that act and its progeny that what Representative Luna identifies may not be enough. You don't want to complicate too many things, but you want to make sure every bit of it is gotten rid of. So maybe you have your suggestions for supplementation in order, if so, and you bring those so that this thing can be a nice and complete package to get rid of this terrible, terrible act, which essentially began this whole, all this nonsense we're seeing now that allows it. And what is now, again, the go-to that may or may not be proper that Trump is using. He wants to claim he wants to make America great again. Americans, so-called, don't understand they are criminal since 9/11. It's just you haven't been caught yet. When people finally come to terms with that, I think maybe there's going to be a shift in the mentality of people in the United States of America. I don't know. I don't know if they'll get to that shift. I don't know if they'll get to see this. But U.S. judge says Trump can use the Alien Enemies Act for deportation. And we're going to find another conundrum here, but we're going to go through this tab just to show you this is what comes out of the courts. U.S. judge says Trump can use the Alien Enemies Act for deportation. The federal judge in Pennsylvania ruled on Tuesday that the United States can use the Enemy Aliens Act to fast-track the deportations of accused Venezuelan gang members, in what appears to be the first court ruling that backs the Trump administration's interpretation of the 1798 law. Judge Stephanie Haynes of the United States District for the Western District of Pennsylvania ruled that President Donald Trump has authority to declare the Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua a foreign terrorist organization and deport its members under the Alien Enemies Act, but she criticized the administration's practice of deporting people sometimes within a matter of hours. So remember what I've been saying last many episodes now about due process. Haynes, appointed by Trump during his first term, ruled that the administration must give potential deportees at least 21 days' notice and the opportunity to challenge their removals to avoid the possibility that people who are not gang members may be errantly removed from this country. She made the ruling in a court papers in the case of a Venezuelan man identified as ASR. Haynes did not rule whether ASR was a member of the gang, but she said that the people like him must be given more opportunity to challenge their deportations. Haynes required the government to provide notice in Spanish and English and provide interpreters when necessary. Lee Gallant, an attorney with the American Civil Liberties Union who was representing ASR, said he would appeal. We strongly disagree with the court's decision to allow the government to continue using the wartime authority for peacetime, and will appeal that aspect of the decision. Listen carefully there, that aspect, so that you're going to appeal in part. Haynes' ruling is contrary to other federal court's decisions on the Trump administration's interpretation of the Alien Enemies Act, which the president invoked in March as legal justification for deporting hundreds of men when his administration accused of being Tren de Aragua members. So this decision, contrary to others, allows this whole matter now to go to the Supreme Court, so we can all finally find out, is the Enemy Aliens Act of 1789 the proper law to use? So it has taken this long, and we still don't have an answer on the law. So what is the law as we go on this? At least We know due process is required and that it's not different among any of these cases. So no red-blooded American, so-called, should feel differently about this. And this is the in part. They said due process is required for people. And this whole point is about persons are entitled to due process, not just citizens of the United States. And why wouldn't we want to give someone the opportunity to attempt a challenge against deportation if they should be here, however they get here? Remember, the huddled mass is yearning. We're supposed to be opening our arms. Also, these appeals that are going up aren't necessarily going on what we think and what they're saying. This may not be actually about this Civil War period act, but the Supreme Court decided something about this act. Very interesting. Like I said, one judge just gave it to him. She demanded to make sure that there was a due process. This birthright question, which is also coming through the court, was previously answered pursuant to the 14th Amendment, where there were persons born. Again, we're not U.S. citizens born. Persons born in the United States that may be revisited, but it is not the leading question for a review, of which is giving the Supreme Court justice a bit of a fit, as you can hear, we're going to hear as we move this thing along. The way these cases are moving through are not very tidy. Again, the chaos is causing a lot of trouble. But the primary part of these cases, one of these cases, is focusing on whether the federal district court judge's injunctions have force and effect beyond the district the judge resides in. Which, in a hearing here, I think it happened here just very recent, Clarence Thomas was asking, so we survived until 1960s without universal injunctions? And the answer to that was yes, by a government attorney. It's only been since 2007 that these have been being used, and they have, in the government's view, been troubled because of that. Since only 2007, these nationwide injunctions. The Supreme Court appears torn after arguments in the Trump birthright citizenship case that's being heard. The justices heard arguments whether a federal judge in a single district can block Trump's administration policies across the country. But they also seem troubled by the legality and the consequence of the executive order underlying the case, an order issued by President Trump on his first day in office ending birthright citizenship or the granting of automatic citizenship to all babies born in the United States. The three lower federal judges have said that Mr. Trump's order violated the 14th Amendment of the Constitution, as well as long-standing precedent, and blocked the policy across the country. In an unusual move, the justices had agreed to hear the oral argument on whether the judges should have limited their rulings only to the states, advocacy groups, and individuals that had sued over the order. The justices appeared to struggle with how they might quickly weigh in on the legality of the order, which the administration had not asked them to review. And for those of you that appeal, this is what your questions are when you send them up to appeal. If you don't have the question before the court to review, they won't look at it. Or maybe not. Likely they won't. Now, I've seen cases that did justice, and they'll pick it up anyway. But a lot of times they just, especially if you're not having an attorney to be attorned by, they won't listen to these matters very deeply. They only go on what you ask, the question you ask to be reviewed. But they're torn about how they get at that, whether or not he could do it. But on another Venezuelan matter, the Supreme Court ruled 7-2 that barred the Trump administration from removing alleged Venezuelan gang members held in northern Texas under the Alien Enemies Act for now, but says that they can be removed under other immigration laws. And so, it's, as I've said, Trump can deport, but he has to provide due process and use the appropriate provisions of law to do that. Well, why Trump is waging war on law and due process, intending to make America great again, is currently lost on me, except that, as I've been observing, working toward the future that they want, where due process is not a factor, one migrates by 15-minute city permission, or 2-minute city arrest and conviction, that Trump is also saying he will deport U.S.-born kids together with undocumented parents. These are all kind of coming together, and the Supreme Court is having difficulty separating them out. They're not liking that he's applied the Alien Enemy Act. As I said, they should be provisions within the immigration law. I remembered reading them a long time ago. I could not cite them to you. There's provisions of due process for these things already out, written out, and they can be followed. It wasn't supposed to be so chaotic. Trump expanded on his promise to deport undocumented immigrants. Well, it's kind of simple. You just document it. How about that? And it doesn't matter if they're documented or not. Once they're a person available to immigration laws, they have certain due process rights. And the Supreme Court has been consistent about this. The district courts are consistent. That's one of the things that has been consistent. And I have to say, thankfully, due process may be the last thing we have. It'll be the last little bit of statement we get to say and make a public record for that's still protected. Speaking widely about his plans for mass deportation, President-elect Donald Trump said families with undocumented parents who have U.S.-born children would be deported together because he doesn't want to be breaking up families. So the only way you don't break up families is to keep them together, and you have to send them all back, Trump said to the Meet the Press, Kristen Welker. Even kids who are here legally, Welker asked. Well, what you've got to do if you want to stay with their father, well, we have rules and regulations, Trump said. Well, except when it comes to constitutional rule that people have fundamental right to due process and an expectation that the officer having taken an oath to that constitution will obey their undertaking or go to the Supreme Court if they have a question before they adversely affect people, not after or 160 years late. Why do I say 160 years late? Because apparently it's in that 1865 law that might be behind the rationale, which has just surfaced at the Supreme Court that Trump was talking about. Finally, get a little bit of why behind this. It's not because Trump wants to keep families together, but apparently he writes, the big case today in the United States Supreme Court, birthright citizenship was not meant for people taking vacations to become permanent citizens of the United States of America and bringing their families with them all the time laughing at suckers, the suckers that we are. The United States of America is the only country in the world that does this. For what reason? Nobody knows. But the drug cartels love it. We are, for the sake of being politically correct, a stupid country. But in actuality, this is the exact opposite of being politically correct. And it is yet another point that leads to the dysfunction of America. Birthright citizenship is about the babies of slaves. As conclusive proof, the Civil War ended in 1865. The bill went to Congress less than a year later. And in 1866 was passed shortly after that. It had nothing to do with illegal immigration for people wanting to scam our country from all parts of the world, which they have done for many years. It had to do with Civil War results and the babies of slaves who were our politicians felt it correctly needed protection. Please explain this to the Supreme Court of the United States. Again, remember, the Civil War ended in 1865 and the bill goes to Congress in 1866. We didn't have people pouring into our country from all over South America and the rest of the world, and it wasn't even a subject. What we had were the babies of slaves. Thank you for your attention in this matter. Good luck with the very important case. God bless the United States of America. So if this is true, whether the Supreme Court decides that it would be too much trouble for the society to correct this now or allows this interpretation, then we're witnessing yet another law that has been allowed by the court to be wrongly used for not just 40 or 50 or 60 years, but 160 years, and wasn't corrected immediately with the first anchor baby cases, which, if never intended by Congress, would admit the people are suffering false expectations or unlawful migration, all the while being witnessed by the courts, the Bar Association members, and all those attorneys that we're told would be independent, that justice would prevail, but didn't. And these domesticated foreign occupiers have been and are committing treason under the color of law, a breach of a duty to keep the republic under the excuse that this is the best we got. If the interpretation ought to have been broader enough to encompass immigrants today, then what is the problem with Trump acting without lawful warrant again? this is the types of cases that you have to start watching. This is very interesting what's going on, if what he says here is the truth. However, it's coming out, the Supreme Court just ruled, they're not too sure he can use that Alien Enemy Act, is it? Oh, no, but it's already, they've already looked in and found that he has the rights to deport under immigration law, which I told you. It's just a matter of procedure. You ask whether or not there's a defense against deportation. If they have it, they summarily look at that, the evidence they have. If not, boom, they get on the catapult, over the wall, back they go. But a follow-up here on another deportation problem, Ozturk deportation scandal. And I have to agree, this word of scandal, the way I use it, destroying someone's due process rights, someone who's come here, who's in programs, in immigration, has all their paper right, it's not someone that's undocumented, a doctorate in a university, can't write an article. Where does it say that in the Constitution? Is scandalous, in my view. Newly freed Tufts student grateful to be back in Boston. And I touched on this case and said that this shouldn't have happened. There should have been a hearing where she was. Well, they returned her back. The Tufts University student from Turkey returned to Boston on Saturday, one day after being released from Louisiana Immigration Detention Center, where she was held for over 6 weeks. Upon arrival at Logan Airport, Rumenzia Ozturk told reporters that she was excited to get back to her studies during what has been a very difficult period. In the last 45 days, I lost my freedom and also my education during a crucial time for my doctoral studies, said Ozturk. But I am so grateful for all the support, kindness, and care. A federal judge ordered Ozturk's release Friday, pending a final decision on her claim that she was illegally detained following an op-ed she co-wrote last year criticizing her university's response to Israel and the war in Gaza. Ozturk said she would continue her case in the courts, adding, "I have faith in the American system of justice." She was joined by her lawyer and two other Massachusetts Democrat members of Congress, Senator Edward Markey and Representative Ayanna Pressley. Previously, the State Department memo said Ozturk's visa was revoked following an assessment that her actions, quote, may undermine U.S. foreign policy by creating a hostile environment for Jewish students and indicating support for a designated terrorist organization, a reference to Hamas. So, as usual, the government has no evidence on this, as we can continue to read this scandalous type situation. We suffer this in America. We're getting to see that now in other people. Again, I don't even know what it is in Trump. I don't know why he wants to pull this off the way he's doing it. Friday, Judge William Sessions ruled that she was to be released on her own recognizance with no travel restrictions. She was not a danger to the community or a flight risk, he said, adding that he might amend the release order to consider any conditions suggested by the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. But she's fighting to stay here in the United States. Why would she be a flight risk? But there you go. As I've said before, no bail. Her word is her bond. And I just sort of like to think, I think how many people's brains got snapped right there to try and figure this one out. But here's the way we're supposed to see America. We're not supposed to be presumed criminals. Our word is our bond up front. If we aren't showing ourselves to be a flight risk that we're going to return and attend to the summons, if you will, there's no need for all this extra noise. But somewhere along the line, we've lost that. That little detail has been lost into the memory hole. All the court cases I've been hearing about require a bail. Cha-ching. Now, Americans suffering this extortion daily when their citizenship isn't even a question. Showing again, the courts of this country are big bank systems, more like casinos, where the house wins 92 to 98% of the time. What sort of a prison do you live in when you are the energy that runs it? As U.S. Customs and Border Protection plans to photograph everyone exiting the U.S. by car. The CPB spokesperson tells Wired that the agency plans to expand its program for real-time face recognition at the border, potentially aiding Trump administration efforts to track people who self-deport. Yeah, right. Why U.S. citizens too, then? It says everyone. Self-deporting. U.S. citizens are self-deporting that you need to keep track of them? United States Customs and Border Protection plans to log every person leaving the country by vehicle by taking photos at border crossings of every passenger and matching their faces in their passports, visas, or travel documents, Wired has learned. The escalated documentation of travelers could be used to track how many people are self-deporting. Could be, it says, could be used. What else could it be used for? How many people are self-deporting or leave the U.S. voluntarily, which the Trump administration is feverishly encouraging people to do in the country illegally? CBP exclusively tells Wired in response to an inquiry to the agency that it plans to mirror the current program it's developing, photographing every person entering the U.S. and match their faces with their travel documents to the outbound lanes going to Canada and Mexico. The agency currently does not have a system that monitors people leaving the country by vehicle. Although we are still working on how we would handle outbound vehicle lanes, we will ultimately expand to this area, CBP spokesperson Jessica Turner tells Wired. Turner could not provide a timeline when CBP would begin monitoring people leaving the country by vehicle. She tells Wired that CBP currently matches photos of people coming into the country with all documented photos, i.e. passports, visas, green cards, etc., and adds that all alien non-U.S. citizens encounter photos taken at the border crossing are stored by CBP. I hope you remember last episode I was talking about the database that's being built right now to incorporate every piece of information in the United States. The encounter photos can be used for subsequent crossing to verify identity. She did not specify whether CBP may integrate additional photos or data sources in the future. When asked, Turner said, "It's not currently evident that a purpose of the outbound face matching system would be tracking all deportations." Quote, not to say it won't happen in the future, though, with the way self-deportation is going, Turner says. She added, and later adds that the goal of outbound system would be to biometrically confirm departure from the U.S. This differs from the purpose of tracking people coming into the United States, she said, which also considers the purpose and intent of entering the country. And they do ask that, don't they? What do you plan to do? Asking, why are you coming in to your country, your own country? It's not about self-deportation, though, is it? Border guards here are just a disgrace. And yes, I have my own experience. The attack against the American people, so-called, began in earnest after 9/11, the impetus for the Patriot Act and the invasion of our privacy and expectation of privacy, if you listen to them, which folds into the ongoing globalization plan, why the U.S. was after people in caves halfway around the world upon yet more lies and deceit. And I have for you a TruStream Media made video that they made a year ago. It was about the order for expedited biometric entry-exit tracking started in 2020, which all starts with the Clinton implementing A2030. Again, past episodes I've been talking about, tying this all back together. Remember, those were the smart cities orders by Clinton that I highlighted a couple episodes ago, referencing what Trump is doing, mentioning strong communities, focusing on aggressive law enforcement, that the prison is being built around you, that the border wall is the outer wall of your open-air prison. And when you listen to Melissa's video, very good information, I'm surprised that she hadn't considered before that she did her video that the wall would be made to keep us in. Not sure how long ago it was I've been talking about this, but it shows how confined to our thoughts and the programming that we are free and brave people has worked against us. We're all suffering this programming. Give the TruthStream video a listen, folks. Here's the news fulfilling all of that. And again, it's way past. I've been telling you, it's in the law. How long, how many years have I been saying it's all in the law just being implemented? You don't even know it's already there. But will Trump, Trump, Trump? We don't even recognize what he's doing. And I will also agree, he may not even know what he's doing. Which is kind of frightening, isn't it? And what about those promises made, promises kept, to make America great about no income tax, which is also part of the tracking at the border? Well, not so much. Trump okays tiny. Concentrated evil, just a little smidgen of a chunk. Trump okays tiny GOP tax on rich as Republicans hash out big tax and spending bill. Trump's support for raising taxes on the rich comes as the Republicans craft what he calls the big beautiful bill of broader tax and spending cuts. The vexing tax issue illustrates the difficulty Republicans face in approving an overall taxing and spending package, what Trump calls a big, beautiful bill, while facing unified opposition from Democrats. Trump acknowledged Democrats would attack Republicans for a tax hike and that raising taxes was blamed for former President George H.W. Bush's re-election losses in 1992. But Trump contends third-party candidate Ross Perot was what cost Bush the election, not his reversal on his read my lips pledge to not raise taxes. Let me offer read my lips and no new taxes, and then it's the economy, stupid, that was introduced by a pundit. Yeah, start putting all that together. Now look at the world and look where Trump just went. What did I talk about? Economic development. When you look at these investment areas, the foreign commerce zones, they give tax benefits. They give regulation benefits. They give tariff benefits. So how about stopping the tax? Eliminating the extortion of we the people? We don't need no stinking tax bills. But didn't you promise that to President Trump? Why don't you just get the Uniparty to do it? But what I've read coming out, again, as I mentioned briefly before, the congressional committee that just developed their plan, it's not even close to what Trump was talking about. The 1860s theft of freed people and extortion as white citizens before them will continue on the national plantation. So where did I get that white citizen stuff? Right there in that 42 U.S.C. 1981. If you haven't read it, you got to go read it. 42 U.S.C. 1981, where talking about civil rights, it says equal rights under law as enjoyed by white citizens and shall be subject to like punishment, pains, penalties, taxes, licenses, and exactions of every kind and to no other. And Trump is okay with a tiny bit more and no one free from the rest of it. They didn't say they're getting rid of income tax. Now, how's that going to make America great again? Escapes me. And requires you're going to have to get serious and ask, what is America then? And why is Trump interested in suspending the prime constitutional required due process writ? It's now it's starting to become a common term. I see it in the trendings of forums. Habeas corpus. How does getting rid of that make America great again? There's actual people that want that just to say, oh, we got to deport people. People are absolutely mindless. Absolutely mindless. White House advisor, Trump actively looking to halt the habeas corpus. Habeas corpus in the United States is used to tap into federal court system to determine if the state's detention of a prisoner is legal. On Friday, it's not just that. You look at your state habeas corpus, it's any unwarranted restraint of your liberty. And you can extend that out pretty far. But on Friday, top White House advisor announced that the Trump administration is looking into suspending the writ for migrants after a reporter asked if there was a possibility to deal with illegal immigration. The let me just interject again. The court just came out and said you can use the immigration law to deport people. But the proper defense against the no due process is to issue the unlawful restraint writ. But getting to this story, the Constitution is clear. And that, of course, is the supreme law of the land that the, what is the law, folks? The supreme law of the land that the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus can be suspended in a time of invasion, said Stephen Miller, the White House's deputy chief of staff for policy. So I would say that that's an option we're actively looking at. But I have to ask, why? And do people realize the danger of having administration members actively looking to defeat core fundamental constitutional protections that existed before this nation even started over, going over to the pond? So why? Why, when you have the deportation laws are there to use? If you didn't think you'll be considered a foreign pariah in the next novel pandemic, you homegrown criminal. Right, Trump? That's what you're setting up on us? I don't see how it can't be. I don't see how we're moving from it. I see us moving right into the problem. And that presumption of innocence or having to trust the confidence of the government has also long since gone away by the wayside in the UK, where our supposed famous right of habeas corpus came from. A British man spent 38 years in prison due to a miscarriage of justice. The British Court of Appeals has cleared 68-year-old Peter Sullivan of erroneous murder charges, who spent 38 years in prison, which became the longest mistake in the history of the British justice. This was reported by The Guardian. He was acquitted thanks to DNA testing. An additional analysis conducted by the Criminal Cases Review Commission indicated the absence of Sullivan's genetic material on the evidence from the crime scene. The prosecutor's office clarified that if there had been such tests in the 1980s, the error would hardly have occurred. Really? So how did you place an innocent man at the scene of a crime and prove he'd done it, charlatan? Peter Sullivan was convicted in 1987 of murdering a florist in the town of Bebington, located near Liverpool. He pleaded not guilty, and his lawyers appealed the court's decision twice. Well, so much for the help of the attorneys, likely asking the wrong questions and getting the right answers. So much for protecting the innocent coming out of the appeals. And the jurors? Yeah, they're handpicked to work for just us, too. And like he's the only one, the king wrongly presumed guilty despite the plea and all those legal rules of the court. Are you getting the picture here, folks? The DNA was the only thing to rebut the sovereign's presumption of guilt upon you? Is that all we have? Your innocence does not exist, and all that, the trappings of just us, seal your fate. Just like in America. Declaration of Independence, much? In another miscarriage of justice, as we move these things along from place to place, thing to thing, subject matter to subject matter, the definitive COVID vaccine myocarditis paper urging governments to remove the COVID-19 mRNA products from the market due to the well-documented risk of myocardial damage, a risk that is strongest for younger males 40 years old or less. Remember those stories as well. They weren't stories. They were atrocities that were being evidenced. Myocarditis after SARS-CoV-2 infection and COVID-19 vaccination, epidemiological outcomes and new perspectives, the study. And I'll let Dr. Coleman explain some of this study for you better than I. I've got a link to the video. I won't even go through more of that. Just understand SARS-CoV-2 has never been found non-fraudulently to be the cause of the symptoms called COVID-19, and that there have never, ever could have been. As a matter of law, folks, your local communicable disease law everywhere across the globe that has one, they're all pretty much the same. The steps are a little bit different. None of those would allow a dual use for the United States, at least getting over to show that all these jabs were bioweapons. They're prohibited. And yet, what else would we think then if we understood that it wasn't a vaccine that was supposed to help, but it was a bioweapon? It makes sense. It's going to kill people, right? It's going to harm people. So here's what it's been, what Dr. Coleman believes is the definitive study. And it's a definitive vaccine myocarditis paper. And again, he'll explain to you, among other things, the jab is a circulating cardiotoxin in your system for over 700 days. For those of you that have gotten it. And as I've said, there's therapies, there's treatments that you can do to start to get that to remove from your body and get sent out of your body quicker. And there's a tube. Look for a, I'm not going to prescribe much of anything. I've talked about it. There's a two-part system going on, two different medications that you can take. And one inhibits the replication, and the other takes up the receptor that would allow that to function once it's made. So there's a two-part process, and this allows the body to see the problem faster and get it out of your body. So those of you that are involved in this, have it, got the jab, don't give up, start moving toward it. This was a very important discussion. I think Dr. John Campbell does a good job, and I'm going to go ahead and leave that to him because he's the doctor, right? I can just reach from afar and look in and do what I do best is to try and break it down so that we can at least know we have something more to learn and make decisions for ourselves. And then I said, for our part behind the woodshed, we turn the duties of the officials based on the black and white, which they're supposed to follow. Even Trump said, oh, there's rules and regulations we got to follow. He ain't following a one, but that's okay. That's what he says. So I'm telling you, plays both ends. Not good. But that's what we have to do. We cut through that, and we make sure for ourselves that these officials don't get beyond the law, because you watched as 80% of the world got taken down by a bioweapon. Again, administered by the military of the United States government. So whatever the stories are, we can cut right through all that. And for a miscarriage of justice to justice for victims, I hope, a judge accepted AI video testimony from a dead man. Very interesting little story here. An AI avatar made to look and sound like the likeness of a man who was killed in the road rage incident addressed the court and the family who killed him. To Gabriel Horacetis, the man who shot me, it is a shame we encountered each other that day in these circumstances, the AI avatar of Christopher Pelkey said. Quote, in another life, we probably could have been friends. I believe in forgiveness and God who forgives and still do. It was the first time the AI avatar of a victim, in this case a dead man, has ever addressed a court, and it raises many questions about the use of this type of technology in the future court proceedings. The avatar was made by Pelkey's sister, Stacey Wales. Wales tells 404 Media that her husband, Pelkey's brother-in-law, recoiled when she told him about the idea. He told me, Stacey, you're asking a lot. Gabriel Horacetis killed Christopher Pelkey in 2021 during a road rage incident. Horacetis was found guilty in March and faced sentencing hearing earlier this month. As part of the sentencing, Pelkey's friends and family filed statements about how his death affected them. The Arizona court accepted an AI-generated video statement in which the avatar was made to look and sound like Pelkey. The judge is moved by this, and again, it was understood it was AI. There was no deception on that at all. In Arizona, interestingly, the victim is allowed to present their position to the court, but there's no limitation on how. And that's why it was allowed. The AI-generated video found favor in the judge, and the judge then sentenced the man to the maximum that it could have been, even though the prosecutor wanted a little bit less. So, very interesting application of AI, except that in the importance of the intense scrutiny regarding the use of AI and in finding its proper use as a tool, not an authority, because as we can read now, a big problem for AI, hallucinations are getting worse. A strange thing is happening in the world of artificial intelligence. As the bots grow more powerful, they are generating mistakes called hallucinations more than ever. And as this story of the tech writer Cade Metz and Karen Weiss explains, it's not entirely clear why. As an example, they report that the new and improved O3 reasoning system deployed by OpenAI hallucinated 33% of the time when given a benchmark test involving questions about public figures. But that's troubling, but what's more of a head-scratcher is that the error rate is twice that of the previous reasoning system. Similar stats at the other companies back up the notion that this is an industry-wide trend. In a real-world example, they recount how an AI bot for Cursor, a tool for programmers, informed customers that a new company policy forbid them from using Cursor on many more than one computer. After an angry backlash, the chief executive had to explain no such policy existed. The overarching problem is that the bots are based their answers on the crunching of vast amounts of data. They can't determine what is objectively true or false. Despite our best efforts, they will always hallucinate. Repeat that. Despite our best efforts, they will always hallucinate. Damar Adwaldala of Vectara, which builds AI tools for business, tells The Times, that will never go away. Never, folks. AI pronation will never go away. AI error predation. Can you say that with me? The AI error will never go away. Just as I've been saying, governments are putting your life on the line with that, and you ask, well, how does the Arizona judge take that? Well, it was a video that was made by AI, is all. And the statements were read by the AI, generated by text, and it was accurately stating what the victims wanted to tell the court. There was a hands-on planned setup that produced a product that was what the parties needed, not a hallucination. As I said, you could use the tool the right way, or you could let it write legal briefs, or you could let it run your life, or you could let it help Doge, or you could let it create the chaos that you're watching, or you could let it take over your financial system and go to war with you. This has been BTWRLM628. I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs for Nature Willing.
It echoes call. The hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close. Lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed. The truth still rings.
Saints. Join us next week. Heed the call. Behind the woodshed, standing tall.